Davis and I just want to say this to you, Hank. One of the most memorable, on behalf of one of the most memorable moments of 2016, we just want to say, shove it.
take that legacy in the Hall of Fame and shove it, Hank.
Welcome to The Waggle. My name is James Cebulski. David Sanchez with me as always, styling and profiling and looking like a million bucks. And I say that because you can't see what he looks like because it's a podcast. You can find Davis at Davis Sanchez on Twitter, yes, or CUDA33 on Instagram or Davis Sanchez on Facebook. Yeah. Did I get that all right?
All right, yeah.
I'm balling. I'm bringing it on this particular edition. James Cebulski at James Cebulski on Twitter.
Can you spell that for them? Because that might be a problem.
James? That feels self-explanatory, but J-A-M-E-S. And then Cebulski? Yes. C-Y-B-U-L-S-K-I. There you go. Think about it like do re mi. C-Y-B-U-L-S-K-I. There you go. You want to try it?
Nope.
No, you're not going to try that one. Probably because it just sounds lame from a middle-aged man to try to do that, right? But I got two daughters, so that's kind of the world I live in. All right, let's get right into it. We've got lots to get into. The Argos being the Argos once again. The Riders address their quarterback position fully, kind of, sort of. We'll talk about that. And first things first, we get off to the story of the week. The biggest news, I think, in the Canadian Football League, one of the all-time greats, and I'm talking a future Hall of Famer, calling it a career this week, Henry Burris, and a tough way to beat going out in style. Was a Grey Cup champion, Grey Cup MVP. Smiling Hank joins us at this time. Congratulations on an awesome career, Hank, and welcome to the Waggle.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, so why now? I mean, you're going out on a high, and I think a lot of people would say, hey, it's tough to beat, but at the same time, you obviously shown everybody that you still got game and lots of it. So why now?
You can't write a better script than what we did this past year, and especially for myself with the frustrations early on and then trying to come back early and then of course, Trevor, regaining the starting spot. And then, of course, once I got healthy and was able to get back out there and show what I could do, it was just so many ups and downs. And mentally, it was very challenging. But, you know, one of the things that I truly told myself is that, you know, if I finish the season off in the perfect fashion and get a Grey Cup win, it'll be that coveted third Grey Cup I've been looking forward to winning. And what more important time for me than now where both my kids could enjoy it, they'd understand exactly what happened and how we got it done, and they could always remember this, and especially for my wife, who was pregnant last time with our youngest. You know, she didn't get a chance to party and drink out of the cup. So there were so many things that I wanted to just experience this moment with my family and truly, you know, deliver a Grey Cup to this great city here, because, you know, seeing how this city turned out for each and every game, from when we were 2-16 to when we hosted both East Finals the past couple of seasons, to me, there's no better script that you can write than what we have here over these first couple of years, and especially for myself this past year. And it's the perfect note to call it a career, just more stepping away. And I'm not saying retiring, because to me, I'm not flying to Sarasota and playing golf every day. I'm still going to be a working man because I'm still young and vibrant, a lot of things I want to do. But for right now, I'm taking off the cleats and I'm trading it in for a skate so I can beat both my hockey playing sons soon.
So you can put on the foil and really get ready to drop the gloves, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, so tell me this though, was there ever a thought that another team might be an option out there? Because I think there was a lot of speculation. I know we've talked about it here over the last few weeks that, you know, you've shown that you can still play. And, you know, whether there was a situation before Montreal addressed things with Darian Durant, you could have been a viable option there. Saskatchewan obviously needs a quarterback. They go out and recently signed Kevin Glenn. So was another team ever a consideration, or were there at least overtures from other teams?
No, I never even thought of that because, you know, still in my mind, if I would have even thought about coming back, the only place I was going to play is here in Ottawa. You know, with all the work that I've put in to help this organization get here to where they are. And it's still in my mind. If I wanted to go back and you know, approach this season like I'm playing both mentally and physically, I still feel in my mind I could be the best quarterback in this league, and I would be the best quarterback in this league. And that's just how we're taught to think, and that's the only way that you could approach this thing. And I mean, look at the past two seasons. I mean, you know, it's been a lot of great things happening here for teams that people thought it wouldn't happen to. And you know, I feel I played a major role in making that happen. But honestly, at the end of the day, it didn't matter if I was offered the starting job here or anywhere else or backup job, just to be able to sit down and earn an easy paycheck and kind of chill and relax on the sidelines and be a father figure and a extended coach. You know, for me, I think I had different things on my mind, on my plate right now. And, you know, for me, family and future were my most important values about moving forward. And I didn't want to be stingy trying to, you know, rob another year and hopefully get another cup, because right now the most important cup's been won, the one where my family and I have been able to share with this great city. And these will be memories that we'll have forever. But now it's time for us to make our memories together.
Hank, this is Davis. Congratulations. Extremely happy for you. People don't get to, you know, end it on a note like this. A Grey Cup champion in a, you know, a city that is so well deserving of that championship. Obviously, the most outstanding player. One thing that I looked at here really was, it must have been difficult for you. You know, when you know you can still play, and we always see, how many people have we seen walk away a year too late rather than a year too early? And I think this is the scenario. And I sat back over the last few weeks to watch this kind of play out, obviously being with you at the Grey Cup this year and seeing how this all played out, hoping that you would, me myself, for personal reasons and for you, hoping that you retire so you could, you know, walk away on top as the most outstanding player, you know, bringing the Grey Cup to Ottawa. Now that you've done that, because the legacy is really what it's all about. We look down the road 20 years from now, everyone's going to remember that part about you. Now, are you sure now that obviously you can still play? Are you going to be able to walk away from the game and not get the itch? How sure are you you're not going to get the itch to want to come back a year or two from now?
Well, you know, Davis, that's a great question, because, I mean, you always have that small percentage in you that's, you know, got you holding on to the game still. But you know, for the guys who've been there, who played, you know, to a later age, past their 30s into the career, when they started to feel those extra bumps and bruises and the recovery period might have lasted a day or two longer, the grind through the regular season and into the playoffs, it's real. I mean, it's nothing that, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people from the stands see us like they do a video game, but it's much different than that, because, you know, you feel the effects throughout the entire season, and it takes you, you know, certain amount of period of time to recover after the season. And for me, just the grind to get there, I'm like, why should I have to do that again? Because the journey's never the same each and every season. And the thing was, the ultimate price that we paid to come here, to be part of an organization that was starting up, and we guaranteed a Grey Cup, we fulfilled that promise. And the thing is, now that we fulfilled it, what else do we need to do as far as myself? I've always said I wanted three Grey Cups, because I've dragged my family across this country. I spent time away from them when I was in Hamilton, the two roughest years of my life, not having my family there to enjoy it with. But now we're here together. We came here for a purpose. We love this city. The city's embraced us and accepted us. And now we've delivered on our promise. And for me right now, it's like, what else is there for me to achieve? I mean, to me, I don't think the script, even this year, if we won the 150th of Canada's Grey Cup here back at home, I don't think the script to get any better than what it was this past year, because honestly, in the end, 50, 60 years from now, this will still be the first Grey Cup that was won for this organization. And they'll always say that Henry Burst and his family came here and helped us win a Grey Cup.
But what was this year like, though, Henry? Because, I mean, you talk about what a roller coaster year. You come off, you end 2015, you're an MOP, you're the best in the league, you start the year, you get hurt, you get benched, you become almost a forgotten commodity. And Davis and I have talked about how the Canadian Football League, I don't think like any other league in pro sports, there's not a bigger what have you done for me lately than the CFL. You become like this forgotten entity. All of a sudden, you get your job back. Your people, you got the critics breathing down your neck. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the year, you come up off the canvas, and it's like a Rocky story where you come away with, you know, the Grey Cup and the MVP and the Cinderella story, and you get hurt right before the game and all of it. But, I mean, the emotional highs and lows. I mean, it finishes off with a happy ending, but, man, it must have been hard during the year.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. I'll definitely be the first to say that. And, you know, not only did I look at outside critics as, you know, knowing that you know, they're, you know, I always knew people were there because, you know, they've been there always for me. So I'm used to them. And, you know, the moment where I got scared was when they left, but they never left. So that was good. But, you know, I knew that there were critics on inside our organization, but I knew the fact that Trevor was here, they were trying to find a way to get him on the field. If there was any way to start the future, and of course, Trevor was playing good ball up until he got hurt. And then I came back early and I definitely wasn't the same. You know, I hadn't practiced or participated in any football activities in over a month. I only had 2 weeks of training camp, really only played a half of football, really probably full game playing a half and one half of football in as far as in preseason, and then only playing a half in that first regular season game. I didn't play a lot of football, so I wasn't in sync. I couldn't hold on to the ball. And, yeah, I know I got benched, but honestly it was the best thing possible because, I mean, my hand wasn't ready. I wasn't in sync, and I just needed to get healthy. And then once I was healthy and things started to kind of, you know, we started going to a lull as a team and we weren't winning games and, you know, we were starting to lose our mojo, and I'm glad that they still turned to me because regardless of what people said, all I needed to do was get healthy and get back out on the field. And I knew what I was capable of because I can promise you with the competitive drive, when I was in practice, I can promise you I was showing it. And so for me to do the things I did in practice, won everybody over again and showed them that, hey, if ever needed, Henry could go out there and get the job done. And thankfully, when that opportunity came, I got things accomplished the way they should have been.
You know, one of the most entertaining and most memorable moments of 2016, beyond that Grey Cup victory and beyond Daron Carter knocking over your head coach over the course of the season. You know, Davis and I just want to say this to you, Hank. One of the most memorable, on behalf of one of the most memorable moments of 2016, we just want to say, shove it.
take that legacy in the Hall of Fame and shove it, Hank.
Now, I will say this, guys. That was a motive to get my guys pumped up, and it did in the end. So,
you know what?
You do things for a reason sometimes.
Hey, that was, we could joke about it now, obviously, because everything had worked out so great, and it was a rally point for everybody. And we did, you probably heard some of it, and some you haven't. We had a great time with it. But I always said, I said all along that was.
I had your back, Hank. I had your bank all along. I mean, kind of.
Yeah, you know, we said all along that, you know, at some point you think about your career and the fact that you have been looked over time and time again, regardless of all the great things you've done. And obviously, this, you know, it got to you after a while. But doing when you do things like that, it showed me and showed us the confidence you had and your abilities, because you know that you have a bullseye on you once you do that. What was it? What happened? Just give us a little bit of insight now that it's all lovely and roses. What was it that was the tipping point? And don't give me the rally point for the team. I want to know personally, because it did piss you off. What was it? Knowing that your legacy was already stamped, you're proven and balled out over the years, you have nothing to prove to any of the media or anyone else. What was it that pissed you off enough to feel like you had to address it?
I'll sum it up just like this for both of you, because even that final week when I saw I saw you, especially Davis, at the Grey Cup, and it continued to this point. Throughout that week of the Grey Cup, when we were set to play Calgary, they talked about how great Bo was, and Bo had a heck of a season, how great Calgary's regular season was. And they talked about our games head-to-head, our two games where we tied, and we were down by 8 points beginning of the fourth, and then we had a couple turnovers, and Calgary ran away with the game. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever said that Henry Burris didn't play in either of those games. And I looked at the fact that, man, look at what I've done in this league. And none of these guys have any idea. And I was like, if I'm the only so-called Hall of Famer on this field, how come nobody's saying I'm going to make a difference? And I've always felt that that's how I was treated in this league, especially with the media and everything. And that's why I had to say something. But for me, the ultimate way to make my statement heard in that final week when I kept hearing that same old talk again, was to make sure when I step on this field, if this is my last game, which I, in my mind, had a good feeling that it was, you know, I'm going to leave my lasting legacy in this fashion. And, man, it was a fun night.
Yeah, fun indeed. It was a game for the ages. Incredible. And it's true. I look at it now, and we did a ton of stuff all through the Grey Cup, and I don't remember anybody making that point that you didn't play any of their games. So I just slapped James for you.
Hey, Hank, tell me this. Davis told a great story when you guys sat down for an interview during the Grey Cup and during Grey Cup week. And he shared the story about how there was a comment that really kind of hit home for him as a veteran player, that you kind of chirped him on the field about saying, "You're not as good as you used to think you were," or something along those lines. And it ate at Davis. Well, talk to me about this. You talked. You were a talker on the field, and you're the smiling assassin, smiling Hank. Davis was a talker. What was it like matching up with Davis?
You know what, and I'll say this hands down. Davis was honestly one of the hardest defensive backs I've ever played against to throw against, because he was so hard to read, because he would always give you false looks. Because, see, these young guys, they don't understand. Their body language shows everything. And a lot of young guys have tendencies that you can go after. But guys like Malcolm Frank, Davis Sanchez, they were some of the hardest guys to read, because they would show you one look and always give you another look. But they always knew your route tendencies. And they always knew your timing, because playing against guys like Davis taught me how to use my eyes better, how to use my front shoulder better. And he used to talk a lot of junk to me. So every now and then I was like, okay, let me hit below the belt. Let me have some success against him and then hit below the belt. It's just how he used to do that to me also. But, honestly, at the end of the day, it was two great guys battling against each other, just like kids in the backyard, trying to win that mental matchup and hopefully win the game and get a couple of shots at each other. But honestly, once we stepped out of those lines and that final whistle went off, final buzzer went off, there was nothing but respect and admiration for each other and an honor to play against each other.
Thank you, Hank. And obviously, that's I feel the same. And it's awesome to watch everything today. I watched the presser from start to finish. And your two boys wanted to go watch cartoons or something, though. They were fed up. Let's get this thing rolling. Let's get this thing rolling, Duffy. But that was, I thought it was awesome. And when I look back on your career, and I was thinking about this today as I watched everything, and the one thing people that played against you know, and I think the fans have come to learn, is the bigger the game and the bigger the situation is, and I know this by seeing it, up front and against me, and then also just watching over years. The bigger the game was, the bigger Hank played, and that was a problem. And it didn't have to be in the Grey Cup; it could have been in the fourth quarter. But whenever the game was on the line, you obviously have a huge arm. You obviously knew, could read defenses. But the biggest thing that people forget about is you could always make a play with your legs whenever you needed to. You're just a big game player, and I think it shows. Your record, two of the Grey Cups that you played in, you were the road team. We're talking about home Grey Cups. I think Regina had a home one, and that was there was another one. You had two.
Montreal
gets me. Shoot, there you go. Yeah, so twice, two of the games you played in, you were the road team in a Grey Cup. But I'll tell you what, bud, it's a pleasure, and one of the go down in history as one of the greats. It's and you're walking away on top, and it's nice to see, my man. Enjoy this ride with your family and with your crew the next few weeks here, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon, Hank.
Hey, thank you guys both so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
Hey, are you going to be doing TV again? We saw you last year doing a great job with CTV Ottawa last year. I mean, I can't help but think that maybe there might be room for a CFL on TSN panelist, or are you going to continue working local Ottawa television? Are you going to stay with the media or what? You join the dark side?
Well I've already we've already spoke beforehand, and there's definitely interest there. Now that things have died down and everything's official, the talks are going to heat back up now, and we're going to start to come to a conclusion on which direction I'm going. But yeah, right now it's pretty favorable for me joining the good side, the fun side. And, it's something that I have a passion to do and to learn more and to get better at. And I'm hoping that's the direction I'll be going. That's where I'm leaning. And, but yeah, pretty soon here, probably for the next week or so, you'll hopefully hear something. But as far as which direction I'm going to go.
Hey, listen, congratulations on a great career, and I think everybody across the CFL, and it's amazing to see just the social media support and love that you've gotten, and it's totally deserved on a tremendous career. And as a guy who's a long-suffering Chicago Bears fan, Thanks for the memories, Hank. I know it didn't necessarily go the way you wanted it in Chicago, but hey, man, I still got love for a guy who was once not only a guy who grew up in Ottawa that was a longtime Ottawa Rough Rider fan and obviously excited to see the Grey Cup back in the nation's capital, but as a long-suffering Bears fan, I got some love for you from Chicago style too. So take care. Congratulations on everything, Hank.
Hey, appreciate that, James. Appreciate that, Dave. It's great to talk to you guys.
Henry Burris joining us here on the Waggle, calling it a career after stops in Ottawa, Hamilton, Saskatchewan, Calgary in the CFL. And what a remarkable career. And it'll be funny to think that years from now, even though it was only three seasons, Chaz, I can't help but think he's going to be defined as an Ottawa Red Black.
No question. You're defined by your championships, and that's what everyone remembers. And what a way to go out, and what a way to remember Hank.
You think about some of those memorable moments the last couple of years, though, his last two seasons. Obviously, you got the Grey Cup game that goes into overtime that they beat Calgary this past fall. But then the year before, you got the miracle on Bank Street, right? The play with Greg Ellingson, and then you also had the East Final with Edmonton. The snow and the coming down, like there are some classic, iconic
games in a short period of time for Hank, and perfect way to end it.
Hey, you touched on him being a fierce competitor, that he's always smiling off the field, but look back at that 2008 Grey Cup. And that's, you touched on him having to play on the, basically playing road games against these home teams and having success. One of those games came at your expense, not to bring up a sorry memory for you, but what stands out for you with Hank?
Over the years, we always look at what Hank does. He's got a big arm. He's obviously, the test of time. So he's a smart guy. He, can manipulate the defense, read defense. He's a sharp guy. Obviously, well-liked in the room. Guys, the battles with the media we hear about and we've had jokes about, you never hear about any battles with Hank within the room. Only positive stuff from his teammates and from anyone who's played with Hank. A great leader. But the one thing,
you never played with him, right?
I never played with Hank, no. But the one thing about Henry that I think we seem to forget is just what a big game player he was. And we can now refer to it as what was. Just today. A big game player he was.
Yeah.
And he would always, in the fourth quarter of a big game, there's not many other quarterbacks you would have wanted over the last decade with the ball in their hands before you pick Hank Burris. He would make a play with his legs. He's had a huge arm. He just always seemed to make big plays when needed. And in the biggest games, he played the best. And I think in that 2008 Grey Cup, our team was stacked. We were in the Big O. There was 53,000 people, whatever it was. Anthony Calvillo at that time, the most outstanding player in the league in 2008.
Yeah.
And even that, there you go back to Hank again. Hank had some words to say that week about, Anthony won the MOP. Everyone was talking about, the Alouettes at home and Anthony. And Henry was outspoken about, everyone's talking about Anthony. Watch. And he goes out in the game and puts up huge numbers. He's the MOP of the game and wins the Grey Cup. And afterwards, he said, I don't care who you guys vote for during the regular season. I won the Grey Cup and I was the best player on that field. And he said that after the game. But he was, he's a big game player and that's what he'll be remembered as. And he's a legend. And I love the way he's gone out. I was hoping he would go out this way because it's cool to see. Everyone goes out a year too late in professional sports and Hank's maybe going out a year too early. But I think it's the perfect time.
It's almost like the Waggle touch, right? Look at some of the guests that we've had. G-Roy was on a couple of weeks ago. He went out on a pretty good high, going out two touchdowns in the Riders' victory. Now here we go. We got Hank going out in style with a Red Blacks Grey Cup victory. And you know what? He made a point that I think we both kind of went, yeah, you're kind of right. We never talked about Hank being a part of those or not being a part of those two losses.
I sat down with him during the Grey Cup.
And he seemed to note that on your part.
Yes, he did. I mean, he said that nobody mentioned it. We look back. James, do you remember any media member? We sat and went back and forth with media the whole week and broke down the game and talked about the matchup. Did anybody ever say that?
Nope. Nothing that stood out of any sort of substance at any point or that any member of the Stampeders brought up. Well, it's a different story because, it's Hank, so, it could be a different approach this time around. Nevertheless, Henry Burris.
Because we felt like they're we felt that everyone else did too, that they were just interchangeable parts. That Trevor was there, Hank was there, because they were both good. They're but both, we forget that big game, that big game factor, that X factor that Hank has brought to big games time and time again, and he brought it in Toronto.
So congratulations to Hank, and what a story, and just amazing to see, as we touched on, just the outpouring of support and love across the Canadian Football League community and sports fans in general, just really giving him a much-deserved tip of the cap, a great way to go out in style. And Henry Burris, I think we'll be seeing a lot of Hank in and around, and not just in Ottawa. I have a funny feeling he'll be popping up on TVs.
His face—he's got too big of a smile to be not in front of a camera to have a helmet on.
He doesn't have a face for podcasting or radio like you and I. Now, the one thing that for me anyway, you're a handsome guy. The one thing I do want to take issue with, the rain on the parade on Hank's Day, where people were saying, you know, Hank, you very much, and all of that, comes the Toronto Argonauts being, well, there's no other way to describe it, the Argos being the Argos, and on Tuesday, the Argos announced, just as Henry Burris is getting ready to make his announcement and say goodbye, and they're carrying it live on television and live on web streaming, all of it, what comes out? The Argos release the news that they have fired Jim Barker as their general manager. And to me, thank you. How? You had you got eliminated from the playoffs 3 months ago. 3 months ago, you knew your season was over in 2016 and you could start planning for the offseason. Over 3 months ago, your season ended November 5th. You've had 2.5 months at least, maybe even three, to make a decision, Davis.
Give him the one blackout.
And this is the day? This is the day that you choose to make that decision? 3 weeks to free agency? Like, I think collectively, if you're a CFL fan, you want to see Toronto have some success. Right. You want to see the league completely healthy. And you know what? A healthy Toronto Argonauts team is better for the league. It's better for the bottom line. It's better from a marketing standpoint. It's better. And yet, a story like this, and look, I don't think anybody has an issue with the move being made, because I think a lot of people thought it was inevitable.
But
why now? It was stupid.
I'll agree with you, James, and you're obviously pissed off about this. And I agree. At the end of the day, the Argonauts don't owe Henry Burris anything in regards to when they make their decisions in their business operations. Maybe this is the time that they figured it out. But I would agree with you. It seems like bad timing. It looks like bad timing, and it is bad timing. And the Argos seem to keep on making mistakes or doing things that we deemed wrong and not looking.
Any other day, dude. Yeah, there's any other day.
They have the blackout period in the Grey Cup, which we've been talking about this. They didn't do it before the Grey Cup. We thought it would get done before the Grey Cup, so Grey Cup week they could move on with whatever was going on and not talk about that. Then we thought, okay, the blackout period, no announcements during the Grey Cup. So we thought as soon as the Grey Cup was over that Monday or Tuesday, we were getting ready to follow the news on the announcement. Nothing. Then we get to Christmas, like, okay, you know what? December 22nd, everyone's off for Christmas now. They'll wait till January 2nd. January 2nd comes, nothing again. And so now we're like, what the heck is going on? Now we're into January 20s and still nothing.
We even talked about it last week or the week before. Somebody pointed it out on Twitter, quoted me by saying, I'm assuming it's status quo for the Argos.
We said that. It said because we hadn't heard this. There's no way they're going to go to the end of January and then announce it. So they're back. They're coming back. Jim and Scott will be back. We assumed that. And that's what. And then all of a sudden, we get the announcement at the same time as Hank's announcement this morning, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. That being said, we're talking about, David Naylor had a story this morning on TSN talking about Michael Copeland it's been known that he's been down south combing the south, looking for, talking to possible candidates, guys, either NFL execs or NFL personnel guys who may be on his short list. On the Argos short list for a general manager. So it looks like that's the direction they're going to go.
Is that the direction, though? I mean, you tell me, as a guy who's played in the NFL and in the CFL, wouldn't you want to have a guy who's got CFL experience?
The biggest issue when you bring – see, I think you can bring an American who doesn't – obviously, when I say American, I mean guys who –
who strictly have American experience. Now, if you're American,
so NCAA, working, NFL,
if you've been working in like John Huffnagel, obviously I don't consider him as an American. He knows the CFL game. He's been in it for, you know, 20, 30, whatever years it is. So these guys, Jim Pop as well, these type of guys. But a guy who's a strictly an American evaluator,
yes,
like you say, NCAA, NFL, whatever it is, the issue is going to be not that they can't evaluate talent and they can't see what kind of guys could translate into a Canadian player. The problem is how do you juggle the ratio? You don't know how to juggle the ratio and what exactly you're looking for in your Canadian content in regards to, you know, is this guy a good Canadian player? Does this fit? How do you juggle the ratio? And that's the issue that a guy, and that's such a huge factor in the CFL, yeah, that I don't think, regardless of how great or how sharp of an eye for talent you have and your history in American football, it's pretty tough to be able to learn that quick the nuances of the ratio and juggling.
Balance the right ratio, yeah.
It's tough. So, I mean, I think you come in as an American with an American football history and be a personnel guy for a year or two and then move to a GM spot, but to be the big dog right away without knowing the nuances of the ratio and those type of situations, I think it's a different game.
Yeah, it's a completely different game. I would agree. So
some guys have had success, but they haven't. Actually, I was thinking more of on a coaching standpoint. We're talking about general managers here, so I don't know.
Yeah, and whether it's an advisor or a guy who can come in and maybe like a president of football operations who can, hey, here's how we operate, or from a business standpoint, sure, all the way down, and to kind of have, you know, football operations say. But Scott Milanovich is still in the spot of being coach. And, you know, first off, we'll talk about Jim Barker here for a second, because, and we'll get into the potential replacements. But, you know, Barker, ultimately, I think his fate must have been sealed in my mind with the Drew Willey trade, right? And you look at how much they gave up in that deal.
James, is that Drew Willey deal Jim Barker's fault?
Well, and that's...
Be fair about this.
Is that Jim Barker's fault? And I was just going to say, you know, the sense that I think that you hear quietly that I don't think Jim's ever come out and said, in fairness to,
he might now,
to Jim. Yeah, he might now. Wasn't me! But it sounds like that was Scott Milanovich who really pushed and really wanted Drew Willey
to be that guy.
But ultimately, Jim had to be the guy to make the trade.
So you're saying it's on Jim then, because he's the one that pulled the trigger.
Well, he's the general manager, right? I mean, he's the guy who ultimately made the transaction and made the deal. Now, whether that was heat from the front office or from, you know, from the coaching staff, you know, my understanding is that Scott Milanovich was and is a big Drew Willey fan. And I guess Jim ultimately made the deal to part ways with a first rounder, a third rounder, and an all-star defensive back in TJ Heath, who just happened to be tied for the league lead in interceptions in 2016. So they gave up an awful lot in order to get Drew Willey, who never once led a football game as the Argos starting quarterback. I mean, never mind win a game. They never even led a single game at any point with Drew Willey as quarterback. And now you've got a $400,000 a year quarterback who you may cut bait with. I don't know. Like, so is he the guy going forward? Because what happens if Milanovich isn't your guy?
Right.
Suddenly, what does that say about Drew Willey? Is he your guy? Because now the general manager that brought you in,
right,
first off being Milanovich,
right,
secondly being Willey, is no longer here.
Right.
So what direction? Like, this entire organization is in flux. And I like Michael Copeland, who's at the top of the food chain. And I trust Michael Copeland, and he's a smart business guy.
Yep.
But the Argos are in a world of hurt right now, a world of hurt from both a marketing standpoint, from a fan experience standpoint. Obviously, the BMO wasn't a hit right out of the gate, but they got to get this right. They got to get this move right and make sure they get somebody who knows what they're doing and get things back on track.
Who wants this job? The question I have right away is who would want this job? Why do you want, other than Toronto being an amazing city to live in?
Well, I think the city.
You have a great facility. If that team can turn it around, now all of a sudden you've gone from having one of the worst jobs in league to the best job in league.
Yes.
Because there might not be a better place to live than Toronto and in that beautiful stadium. The question I have, though, is now you look at the timing of this, where are you going to find, if you're a GM coming in and you want to move around the coaching staff, it's too late. The good coaches and the coaches people want are already re-signed for next year or have moved on to wherever they're moving to.
Yep.
If you're looking for...
Orlando Steinauer. Whoever it may be.
Exactly. Yeah. You're basically tied. As you come in as a GM, you're tied to Drew Willey as your quarterback, mm-hmm, and you're tied to Scott as your head coach, whether you like it or not. So that's not fair for this person now coming in. This is not fair. For their first year, if he has a bad record, You can't put it on them because this is not their, that was not their hire. And it's too late in the off season, or just the way things work right after the season's over in the Canadian Football League, the way things work, it's too late to jump on it now because you've missed out on all the coaches that are the coaching carousel that's going on, and all that's left are the scraps that didn't get promoted to other jobs. So like Bill Parcells says, this famous quote that I love to use, if I'm going to cook the dinner, let me buy the groceries.
Yes.
And I think that's the situation we're talking about here, is someone's coming in with and they're being asked to cook something. You know, you always say chicken salad out of chicken-ish.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair. So we're going to see how that plays out.
Yeah, no, it's there's a lot to sort out in Argo land. And I look at it in the sense, how do you think Sean Lemon feels, who just got extended to a new contract a couple of months ago, and then they announced that, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're inheriting, you're inheriting, and now I'm sure he's got a little more breathing room, but, you know, now, you know, whoever the next GM is, you're inheriting signings that you didn't sign off on, that you didn't necessarily,
sure. And so... Not to say that they're not going to be good signings.
Exactly,
Let's not be foolish enough to think that Scott Milanovic doesn't know what he's doing when it comes,
absolutely.
It comes to quarterbacks.
He's a Grey Cup winning coach.
If he, as you would say, hitched his wagon to Drew Willie, he did it for a darn good reason. So hey, look, I'm not willing to just chuck out Drew Willie and say these are not the right guys and this is not going to work. It may work. This guy may come in. Drew Willie might go off this year. They get some pieces and they have a good season. I'm just saying it's a difficult situation. Not to say it's not going to work, but it is difficult.
Okay, let me throw some of these names here for potential candidates, and you tell me if maybe who are the guys. Whittle it down to your short list or maybe your ideal choice. Okay. Obviously, Jim Popp right out of the gate, right? In terms of experience, championships, pedigree, what he did in Montreal, obviously it had to come to an end, but relationship with Scott Milanovic has got to count for something. You've also got Brock Sunderland in Ottawa, who's kind of the waiting in the wings, the heir apparent, also interviewed, I believe, in Montreal, the job that Cavis Reid ultimately landed. You got Brendan Tamman, you know, former GM in both Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, a guy who's got a tremendous track record or a lot of experience in the CFL
and
smart personnel guy. You got Eric Tillman with the Tabbies. And then in Saskatchewan, you've got John Murphy, Jeremy O'Day's names are being mentioned. You've got G-Roy Simon with the BC Lions, who, boy, G-Roy's his value and marketability has certainly skyrocketed in the last couple of years, showing that he's not afraid to roll up his sleeves and get his hands dirty when it comes to evaluating talent. You got Danny McManus, who, you know, a guy who is a likable, personable guy, you know, in terms of as a player, well-liked, well-respected, a guy who played for years and years and is now earning himself a lot of respect in the front office as well with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And then you've also got Sean Burke, also with the Hamilton Ticats as well. So lots of names that are kind of being floated about already. Who do you think are the early guys for maybe the inside track potentially?
I thought that Brock Sunderland was a lead candidate for the Alouettes. He's got pedigree in this game. His dad, a longtime NFL exec, and he's a young up and comer. Anyone you talk to, well, first of all, we have our relationship with Brock. I talk to him, and anyone who talks to him, he's extremely sharp, passionate about the game, a hardworking kid.
He was in Montreal when you were there, right?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. And then he went off to the New York Jets and he came back. But he's a guy who's going to be very good and for a long time. I thought he was a lead candidate for the Montreal job. I think he, in this situation in Toronto, I don't see it the same. Just as I kind of feel like they need someone stability-wise, they need somebody who has been there, done that, just because there's so much flux kind of in the whole Argo situation right now. I think you need someone that's going to settle things down.
So a veteran guy then.
I think
a guy
so
with some experience. So that's,
I
guess, Pop, Brendan
Tamman,
or Eric Tillman.
My top three would be Pop, Tamman, Tillman. And then if you're going to look for someone who is a young up-and-comer, then you go with Brock and G-Roy Simon, obviously, who is a lot of talk about those guys as future GMs and guys to look at moving forward. But I think Jim Popp, I don't know what Jim wants to do, but if by chance Jim's interested, I think he's got to be the number one guy on your list, you know, along with Tamman, of course.
Yeah, I think obviously there seems to be a natural fit for Jim Popp when you talk about the experience and, you know, obviously the track record. Hey, what he built in Montreal and ultimately his failing the last few years was to find a proper replacement, that heir apparent for Anthony Calvillo. And, you know, he played a lot of Yahtzee and tried a lot of different scenarios that ultimately didn't work. But, you know, when you look at over the years, the Tracy Ham into Anthony Calvillo, the receiving core that he had, quality championship caliber defenses year after year that you were a part of for so many seasons as well. You know, great running backs between Mike Pringle. I mean, you know, Brandon, I got a lot of time for as well because, you know, his teams didn't necessarily win, you know, in years past, going back to some of the days with Winnipeg and that. But, man, sharp eye for
talent
and a guy, that a lot of people – and you look at some of those situations.
He brought in some talent.
He brought in a ton of talent.
A ton of talent, so, yes. But, you know what, I'd be skeptical about these guys on this list, the names we know. Because it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense to me. Does it make sense to you that any of those guys look at this list of guys and look at the timing we're talking about now?
Yeah.
At the end of January, is it if either of these guys were legitimate choices for Michael Copeland, would we be waiting for January 20 something to make this decision? It doesn't make sense.
No.
So I'm
no.
That
why would you jump into a situation now if you're a veteran GM? Like, hey, listen, you want, I mean, at the same time, you want to work and you want the gig and you want to be a general manager. If you were a general manager, you want to stay being a general manager. So I don't know if you're necessarily turning down the opportunity, but I think you
position from the Michael Copeland side, he wouldn't be if those guys were on his list of interest, he wouldn't be doing it now. He would have done it 2 months ago.
Yes.
So that's why I believe the report from David Naylor saying that he's been down south flipping over rocks trying to see who's available and who they like out of there, someone different to try to find to move in, some bring some new blood into the league. That's the direction I think they're going. If they're looking at this list of guys, I think something would have been done, you know, a month or so ago.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, you're going to be – I think you kind of look at this year maybe being a lame duck season for the Argos then, in the sense that you're going to have a new guy that comes in is just going to try to get himself familiar with the personnel. Because how do you get yourself familiar with personnel that you haven't – you know, if you're not familiar with the league, you're not even familiar with the league rules to a large part, right? You can say you watch the game, but until you fully immerse yourself in terms of dealing with a ratio, in terms of dealing with the wider field and the logistics of all of it, you can speak firsthand. There is a major difference having played at a major 1A school for the Oregon Ducks, Davis, having played for the San Diego Chargers, soon to be the LA Chargers, and comparatively to playing, you know, 11 seasons in the Canadian Football League. How many times have we talked about it is a different game? And for all the experience you have, and you might translate that into success up here, but it's going to take some time. It was not going to happen overnight.
It's not, James. We can't just throw it out. When you have a roster with what they have some players on that roster. They have the O-line that's got some great Canadian players and the nice ratio positions there. They have a quarterback who has talent. There's no question Drew has talent. We had that. I mean, there is some pieces there. You can't just throw out the fact that the Argos aren't going to be good this year. We're just saying that the situation, it looks like a difficult situation to come into. But that being said, I don't think, you know, we're talking about the East here. It's not inconceivable that you know, with a couple right moves and they get off to a good start, things couldn't be rolling in Toronto.
You can win the division. Fighting.
Why not?
I mean, the East seems wide open. You know, obviously, Ottawa's got – you know, they got to retool their secondary, but you've still got an all-star quarterback in Trevor Harris.
They lost 9 guys in a 5-man secondary. Shoot.
Retool is okay. Yeah. Hold on. They went nuclear on it.
Goodness.
So,
gracious.
I mean, obviously, Hamilton's got some stuff to work out as well from their offensive line, their DB. Montreal, I don't know if it'll happen right overnight with Darian Durant. He's going to have to find some time to get comfortable with Jacques Chapdelaine's system.
He needs some more weapons.
And so maybe there's a window if the Argos defense can kind of find that groove again. Hey, let's move on from the Argos here. I think we both agree that the timing was horrible on the Argos part, and I think now all eyes wait and see as to what that next chip is going to fall as to who takes over for the general manager position in Toronto. But they've got some
Drake?
Damage control. You know what? It might be Drizzle. Why not?
Let's throw his name in there. So we got Tillman, Drake. Pop, Tamman, and Drizzy, and G-Roy.
Drake. Right.
And Brock Sundlich.
Exactly. Okay, Kevin Glenn is back with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I think we were both a little disappointed that he didn't wind up in Edmonton.
Yes.
Because then it would be the circle of life, the Lion King of the Canadian Football League, where Kevin Glenn would have played for every team in the CFL, or at least been a part of every team for at least some fleeting moment. They're not done. Is this what they're going to go to camp with Kevin Glenn as their one veteran quarterback?
No, I think and this is this. I said when you first saw
what's
this.
What's going on here?
Because to me, this was a genius signing, and it fits to everything that I've been saying. It's in the situation they have. They got their eyes on something else. They're not going to camp with this lineup either. But what Kevin does is if whatever they have cooking. It doesn't for some reason come to fruition. Now they have at least another veteran on the roster who you know Kevin could play if needed. They signed Kevin.
He can play.
Thinking he's good. They didn't sign Kevin. They're going to say that now. Like we say, they're going to give us the fluff that says, yes, we've signed Kevin. These guys, we're comfortable with who we have, and they're going to compete for the job.
He's had moderate success.
Yes. Oh, wow. Well, let's touch on that after.
Totally, yeah.
James is talking smack. There's been some good talk back and forth between Chris Jones and Darian Durant. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk about KG first. Yes.
So that situation is they're going to bring him in. Now at least they have a security blanket that says, hey, if something doesn't get done with one of the guys they're trying to figure out down south or whatever trade they're trying to work out, if something doesn't get done, at least now you have, you know, the young guys in Waters and Bridge and who can battle it out, but you have a proven
Mitchell Gale,
you have a proven commodity in Kevin. If Ish hits the fan, you have Kevin that can go in and play for you. And shoot, he's proven he can win games. So you have that as well. But they're not finished at all. That was a good signing by them, though. A really good signing.
Yeah, I guess just the question is, now you got Burris off the market. He's signed. You got Nichols that's signed. It's what other option is there from a viable standpoint? And Travis Lule. And it's interesting because we've talked about it here and how the Lions didn't want to move Travis, you know, to Montreal. So why would they consider a move within the division? But if an opportunity to start for Travis, he might be willing to listen. But somebody made an interesting point to me recently that makes you kind of think, well, maybe there's some logic to Travis staying put in BC. And that's if Jonathan Jennings has a window to explore the NFL at the end of 2017, what's to say that Travis Lule doesn't get his old job back for the 2018 season, and
Jonathan,
he's been healthy?
The way things have been going with CFL guys going down south, he's young, he's talented. It almost seems obvious he's going to get a shot. And if he gets a shot, if he makes it, he's gone for the whole year. Even if he doesn't make it, he's still missing half a year, which means Travis gets his job back.
He'd go through at least camp anyway, least, right? So
half the season's over.
Wouldn't be back till Labor Day at the earliest.
Starts. I mean, the season's half over. I mean,
yeah.
But that, you know what's funny? Just a quick note back to KG. What did I say? Rewind the tape back to last week's podcast. And I said, when we talked about the available quarterbacks on the market and we talked about Saskatchewan, I said, quote, he fits exactly what Saskatchewan does. He's a good three steps, get the ball out of his hand, get the ball to playmakers. That's the offense they have. That's the way they run their offense. And I said Kevin Glenn's a perfect fit for that offense.
And Kevin Glenn, in all fairness to Kevin Glenn, probably will go down as the Rodney Dangerfield of the CFL. Where a guy who, and we've talked about guys who sometimes didn't get no respect. And it's funny, I was thinking earlier that Henry Burris might be this generation's Damon Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Where he didn't necessarily get a lot of love at various points over the course of the season, but big game players.
Yes.
You look at Damon's record in big games.
Damon
was a beast in big games.
Yes, he was.
Hank, much of the same way,
yeah.
A baller when the games were on the line or a title or a championship.
And when you look at
mattered.
The body of the work of both those guys, then you look at it and be like, you know what? If you don't look back at these guys and appreciate them now, you might, you know, you want to, fans will find things to pick at. You know, he threw too many picks or he did this or he did this. But you look at the body of work now. You know what? Obviously, Damon and now Hank.
You'd kill to have a career one of those two guys. And look, I'm not really ready to say that. I'm not saying that Kevin Glenn is in the same class as either of those two guys, but he's been underappreciated in the sense that he has been a starting quarterback in this league for the better part of almost 15 years now.
His passing yards, he's like a top five all-time passer.
He's up there all-time.
Top 10.
And if you were to go back, and Rider fans, I know you probably don't want to necessarily hear this, but think about this for a second from a Bomber fan standpoint. Kevin Glenn gets hurt right before the 2007 Grey Cup.
Mm-hmm. In the Western
How
final.
Does that – yeah, but how does that look in that 07 Grey Cup final between – Winnipeg and Sasky, instead of Ryan Dinwiddie being your quarterback,
KG.
How does it look that KG, because that was a really good team, And they were there for a reason, and KG was a big part of that. With that roster, with that defense, those playmakers.
I can't unequivocally say they would have won it, but there's a darn good chance.
But there's a damn, like, you know, you would have had a better chance winning that game with Kevin Glenn than Ryan Dinwiddie. And how do we look suddenly at Kevin Glenn's career if he is a Grey Cup champion? Now he's got that as a starting quarterback on a Grey Cup championship team. How do we look at Kevin Glenn now, years later, you know, almost 10 years later for that matter?
Well, he probably also doesn't if he wins that game and is a champion, he probably doesn't go into a lot of the training camps he's gone into years after that as a backup.
As a backup, yeah, totally.
He gets the opportunity, he gets the benefit of the doubt. So that's a good signing for them, but I think we're in the same situation. For Saskatchewan, nothing changes except for they do have someone in the hole if needed to start week one.
And I don't think we want to subscribe to the James Franklin theory. It's just not going to happen. Edmonton and Sasky are not dealing, right?
There you go. I'll take that. That's the best way to put it.
Drew Tate.
And I said.
Maybe Ricky Ray. Or does Ricky find his way back in Toronto? I mean, who knows? We wanted to talk about a little mudslinging, moderate success.
Yes.
Darian certainly.
What's your take, James? Do you feel like it's petty? Is Chris Jones in the wrong for saying what he said? Is Darian being thin-skinned?
I think there was clearly a disconnect between Darian and Chris Jones long before the season ended, right? And there were just things that. You could see it, and we touched on it at various points over the course of the season. Chris Jones was constantly bringing in other quarterbacks, maybe trying to find that heir apparent, or maybe trying to find the guy who, you know what, Darian's not the guy, because they were quick to get rid of John Chick, they got quick to get rid of Weston Dressler, and they've turned the page on Darian Durant, who's been the face of the franchise for the last number of years. Is it petty? Look, I think Darian, for the amount that he's put in, the amount of years that he put in Saskatchewan, I think he probably deserved to be treated a little bit better in terms of the comments or just the way that Chris Jones kind of dismissed him as having moderate success. And to be a little more respectful. Okay.
I'll give you the quote now. Yeah. So Chris Jones said Darian, during his time there with Chris Jones, was moderately successful. And when Darian took offense to that. I mean, look at the numbers. I don't think Chris is wrong for saying that. He said he's moderately successful. The numbers would agree. But like what Darian said was, that's fine, but our defense was the last place defense in the league, a defense that you're the coordinator of. And that's Darian's point. Is Chris made a point to say Darian had moderate success, and look at his record. He won three games, not we.
Yeah.
Chris Jones said he won three games, referring to Durant. So if I'm Darian, I don't like that tone either, but he's right.
It got numbers personal.
Darian said that, you know, Darian came back and said that Chris had said he was average, that Darian was average at best. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris didn't say that Darian was average. He said he had moderate success. Now, if you ask me, if I'm on the podium, I'm Chris Jones, and you ask me, what kind of success did my quarterback have over the last 2 years? I'm going to answer moderate success, because that's probably being nice.
I don't know Darian personally. In fact, I'm thinking now, I don't think I've ever interviewed Darian Durant, and if I have, it's been really quick. But I think to a conversation that we had with G-Roy Simon a couple of weeks ago, and he made the point of describing the type of personality and the type of person he was in Regina, and Darian was very mindful. He was very sensitive to people catching him, you know, in a compromising sort of situation when he was in Saskatchewan with the Riders,
doesn't enjoy the bright lights, it seems.
Maybe that's the case,
off the field.
But based on that contract negotiation, clearly got personal, I think, on both sides. I think Darian obviously wanted to be paid, and paid handsomely, for what he has done for the community. The team struggled the last few years, and Chris Jones wanted him to come back on their terms. And I don't think Chris Jones liked the way that Darian handled things at the end of the season. I think it was a lot easier for Chris Jones to say, I am done with you.
Tell me this. How big was week 18 Darian not wanting to play for the Riders in BC?
I think it was huge. I think
you think this is a pivotal point in the fact of Darren Durant not ending his career as a Rough Rider and being sent out of Saskatchewan. Now, you think week 18 in BC last year is a pivotal point in this process?
I think the contract negotiations were already going south as is. But I think that was probably the nail in the coffin from a management and coaching standpoint. I think for me, if you're Chris Jones saying that's my quarterback,
I agree.
No, thank you.
I agree.
You agree?
100%. Yeah. I think that was the day. Stamp that on your calendar for a day when it was easy for Chris Jones to say, you know what, I can move on without this guy.
Yeah,
that was the day.
And you know what, Darian didn't do himself any favors.
We could argue this all night long because I can see both sides of it, but yeah. I would side with Darian in this situation as well. I understand his situation. If he's nicked up a little bit, he's going into free agency, he's nicked up, his team's not making the playoffs, and does he want to go get beat up? As if he gets beat up and tears his ACL or knocks his back out or separates his shoulder, the Riders going to give him $400,000 guaranteed? No.
Nope.
They're not. So, I mean, that be, and you argued the fact, and I think you made a great
But is
point.
That the statement you want to make to your leader, your new boss?
No.
Hell no.
No. H-E double hockey stick, Sabalski.
Exactly. Thank you, Chez. And on that note, we should probably close the book on this edition of the Waggle. Special thanks to Henry Burris, Smiling Hank, who's riding off into the sunset, for joining us here on this week's edition. And you know what? The Riders continue to be exciting, so thank you for continuing to give us all sorts of fodder. I think we're working on getting Chris Jones on here, so sit tight, Rider fans. He's going to be joining us soon.
Resigned Willie Jefferson. Nice signing, too.
Yeah, that was a good signing for them. And Argos, hey, you know, on the bright side, at least we're talking about you, right? That's it. So he's David Sanchez. I'm James Sabalski. If you aren't subscribing already, make sure you can find us on iTunes. It is free. It's delivered right to your tablet or your smartphone. And you can listen to us anytime, any place, anywhere. I know there's people that tell us they're listening when they're on the treadmill or they're exercising. People tell us when they're on commuting to work, whether they're on the train, they're on the bus, whatever it may be, or listening in the car. So thank you so much for taking the time with Davis and I. And we will be back in your face, or in your ear anyway, next week. See ya.